There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1036. 1036? 1036? Oh, I'm sure there's some number nerds out there that have some real strong feelings about whether or not it should be 1036 or 1036. When I was in grade school, if you said and in the middle of a number, I had a teacher who would like come down to you for that. So you couldn't say 1036. I said, no, it's 1036. So I don't even know what's correct anymore. So it's 1036, 1036. 1,036, I don't know. It's a lot of them. If you're going to be in Tacoma, Washington on the 12th, 13th, or 14th of December, I will be at the Tacoma Comedy Club. So come to that. Five shows. One show Thursday, two Friday, two Saturday. Go online to find tickets for that, or you could just go to id10t.com/tour. We also have a few of the Daryl Dixmas Christmas sweaters, Daryl Dixon Christmas sweaters that are available. Merry Dixmas over at id10t.com also. But let's talk about you, the ID10T community, with our ID10T community corkboard. That is the first and last time I will do that particular theme song, just to keep it fun. Events at id10t.com is how you would submit for that. Like Ryan Gutierrez, who writes, I love how you're always telling people to make something, so I finally made a thing. Well done. I wrote a book called Scars in Time, and as the name would suggest, it's a time traveler thriller romance about a guy trying to fix his wife's life by time traveling, and of course, it does not go as planned. It's a very personal story based on some very real traumatic events, exaggerated and fictionalized to share the story, inspire people, and cope with the real stuff in a very cathartic way. It's available on Amazon, on paperback, in ebook, and at Barnes & Noble on paperback. Well done, Ryan Gutierrez. Congratulations for making your thing. Events at id10t.com if you make your thing or you want to promote a friend of yours's thing that you like or just something you saw that you thought was really cool, a community event that you think people should know about. This episode is Karen Gillan, who first made her appearance on this podcast back in 2011. Oh, here we are back to numbers again. 2011, 2011, 2011. I like 2011. Yeah, she and the then cast of Doctor Who made an appearance on the Comic-Con episode. I believe a young Will Wheaton was on that episode as well, because he was also a big fan of the show. And that was a fun episode because Will was nerding out about them, and then when they realized Will was in Stand By Me, they freaked out over him. So it was very much a mutual freakout situation. It was really fun. But, you know, Karen is so funny, so kind and down to earth. Like, she's a legitimate action superstar now. And if you just met her, you know, like at a coffee shop or whatever, you think, what a nice what a just a cool, chill person she is. So I cannot express enough how fun and cool she is. She's promoting Jumanji, The Next Level, which is in theaters Friday, December 13th. And of course, she's in a million other things, and she's directing, which we're going to talk a lot about in the episode as well, and the creative process for that. So I am going to get moving on the ID10T podcast number 1036 with Karen Gillan, starting the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
We'll be right back. work with a designer?
No.
You do it yourself?
I do, yeah.
That's very
impressive. Do, and Lydia does. Lydia found this wallpaper.
Did she?
But I scouted all the furniture and put in all of the...
You guys are stylish. God damn it. I just keep making mistakes.
Would you even have time to...
I mean, I find the time, and I look on the internet, and then I buy it, and it looks terrible. Or, like, paint the room blue. It's like, why did you do that? It's awful.
It's a fun... God. Yeah, I don't know. We've had a good time. She's great with wallpapers, and
yeah.
I'm
she seems like she's a stylish girl.
She's pretty stylish.
She's good with that stuff.
And I like the old timey furniture. So I
yeah, all the antiques.
I found out. I love to go antique shopping.
Yeah, that's really fun.
Do you go antique shopping when you're on the road?
Wait, is this not in the podcast?
I think we've started the podcast.
We did?
I think we just did.
Oh, that's amazing.
We just did.
I'm glad because yeah. I'm glad. I want to get this on the air.
All the antiquing talk.
Yes, I do sometimes actually go to antique shops, and it's really fun. I like old things, all things old.
Well, you come from a part of the world. It's not the oldest part of the world, but there's some pretty old stuff in Scotland.
Yeah, compared to America.
Oh, by a long shot.
This is like a lot of infant stuff here.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I go back to Scotland and like the buildings are so old that the doorways are really short because people were smaller back then.
They were
then.
Just tiny.
Yeah, just tiny wee people.
They were just tiny people.
Aye, that's right.
I actually follow an Instagram account that's called like Castles of Scotland.
Oh, do you?
And it just shows you like, it'll just show you a castle. Uh-huh. Sometimes they're in good shape. Sometimes they're completely in disrepair. And it's like, Oh, this was founded by this clan and this.
Want to follow that.
Castles of Scotland.
Are you thinking of buying a castle in Scotland?
I mean, I would. That would be fun.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Lydia keeps talking about, I think she might be eligible for Irish citizenship. So she keeps talking
really?
About like, oh, someday maybe we'll get a place in Ireland.
That would be fun.
Just across the channel.
Not far.
Not far at all.
Not far at all, yeah.
But I like, you know, when you're in LA, old is anything that's, you know, before 1930.
Yes.
So we don't have a ton
Ancient.
Of like Los Angeles. The historical buildings here are adorable.
But you've got the Hollywood history.
We do.
That's your history.
It's rich, but it's also like, I don't know. I remember the first time I went to England. I'm like, I'm standing in a building that was been here since the 1200s. How is that even possible?
Yeah.
Since the 1200s.
Yeah, it goes really far back. It's weird, actually. It's pretty mind-blowing.
But I follow you on Instagram. And
thanks. Thank you.
Your schedule. I would show pictures of Lydia and be like, how the fuck is... She was just in Berlin. How is she in London? Like, it seems like 12 hours later,
goodness.
Now she's, where is she, in Paris? I mean, I know it's all close, but it's still.
No, yeah, we would just do, like, one night in a city, and then we would, you know, open the film, and then just get right on a plane and go to the next place. It was crazy. I've never done anything like that before.
Not even for Avengers?
No, because I always miss the press tours for everything.
Oh.
Because I am busy, which is wonderful, but I would like to do the full one. So finally I got to do it.
You finally got to do the full press tour.
I was pleased.
And now and the thing is, you seem totally fine. Like you were literally in London like 48 hours ago, I think.
Was it? I mean, we had the premiere here in Los Angeles last night.
Yeah.
So I've slept for about 4 hours.
Yeah.
And then I went to Kevin Hart's imprint ceremony this morning.
Okay.
Which was really fun.
What was that?
You know, like this star.
Oh, he put his hands?
Yeah,
he got a star.
The star on the Walk
of
Fame.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so that was pretty exciting.
That's really sweet.
Yeah.
Karen, the amount, it's not even just the traveling city to city. It's like a complete, everything, the complete transformation for each red carpet is a full on thing. It's like, that's incredible.
Well, it's incredible what they do to me. I just sit there. But like, I have really great people doing all of that stuff. And I just say, looks good.
Did you? Oh, also, I just, congratulations on your BAFTA thing.
Thank you very much.
You got nominated for first time, is it first time director?
So basically, it's the shortlist before the nominations.
Mm.
So fingers crossed for a nomination. Let's cosmic order it now. I just did it.
So they announce the shortlist for people who might be nominated?
Yeah, so it's basically a shortlist of 10 films, and then that gets whittled down to 5.
Right.
So it's still like a fun achievement, and I'm really excited for
the film. Of course it's a fun achievement, because even if, like, whatever happens, now people know.
Yeah, hopefully. In the UK, it's out in cinemas right now, so this is a nice little thing to happen right as it's playing.
I can't believe, I mean, I guess, I feel like
when was the first time I met you? It was maybe like 2011, I think. Like, really? It was the first season of Doctor Who.
Whoa.
Your first season of Doctor Who.
That's right.
When we did this crazy thing in New York, and I think there was a DeLorean there.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, you posted the Q&A.
Yeah. And Matt was there, and Arthur was there, yes. And Stephen Moffat. And
that was the New York trip where we all went wild.
Yes, that's right. Because I remember you said you all seemed very taken aback by... Because Matt was like, well, the premiere in London was not like this. And people were like trying to yank your arms out of this. Like everywhere you went, people were pulling and it was like a Beatlemania situation.
Yeah. We didn't know that was going to happen. We didn't know anyone in America watched this television show. No one warned us. And then we come to New York and there's people chasing us and we were just like flabbergasted. We're like, what is happening? You know?
But that was relatively new for that show in the States. Previously, it had been a very obscure
yes.
show in the United States.
Okay.
And it had just been like the Tenant years had just started. They just kickstarted it.
Oh.
And then you guys really stuck the landing and people were so excited.
Gosh, what a crazy time. And we'd been filming for 9 months in the middle of nowhere in Wales. And then they let us loose in New York. So we all just went wild. We went out partying. Like, I can't even tell you. But of course we did, because we've been cooped up for 9 months.
Yeah, I feel like it's okay. I mean, I feel like
Literally Stephen Moffat was like, of course this has happened, because like they're human beings and they're in their 20s.
Oh, he knew you guys went out and went wild?
Oh, yeah, he was laughing at us. He still tells the story. It's very funny.
But that's, I mean, from that period, what did you think, like, what was your career trajectory? Like, what did you think you were going to do? You thought, I'll just do some stuff in England and maybe make it over to the States at some point. Like, what was your plan?
My master plan was I wanted to work in film and television and stage, because that's what I grew up doing in Scotland. And I wanted to come to America as well. I think that was in the back of my mind. It was an ambition that I was harboring to be in films and do all of the things that I'm doing now, except the action. That was not part of the game plan.
Mm-hmm.
But now I do action sequences all the time and I don't understand.
A lot. Like,
a lot.
You're like super ass kicking action. Like action star, Karen. Like it's not just you do some action scenes. You are legitimately an action star between Nebula and Ruby. And I saw some pictures on your Instagram for something called Gunpowder Milkshake.
Yeah, that's...
Which looks like crazy ass kicky.
Yes, very.
So, I mean, I guess you never know what life is going to bring you, but...
Truly, I never foresaw that one. I mean, no, I wasn't even good at that sort of thing growing up. And then I just worked at it film after film. And then at some point... I think I got good at it.
Yeah.
It's so crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, because it seems like you embrace the fitness regimes. Like, I've seen you post stuff.
I'm pretty into that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happens when you work with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It rubs off on a person. It does.
He's not even human. I mean, it's not even...
I know, that's my point of reference for being fit. That's dangerous.
It's not even... It's crazy. But what I noticed was that as tall as he is, there are some shots where you're standing side by side. And it's like, Karen's not that much...
No, I know. We're pretty much eye level when I'm in heels, which is rare for him, I think.
And then there's Kevin Hart.
Me being that tall just accentuates it even more, like the height difference. It's
The Rock, you, Jack, and then Kevin all standing in a line.
Yeah.
Look like a signal strength on a phone.
Yes.
It's like, oh, we got full bars.
Yes.
We got full bars.
That's us.
Yeah, you got Hart to The Rock. How long ago did you guys film Jumanji?
Not that long ago, only a few months ago, earlier this year.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it came together really quickly.
How did they... There's a lot of effects in the movie, too.
Yeah, I don't know how they did that. Truly, the director's just shell-shocked.
That was Jake Kasdan, right?
Yeah, and he's amazing.
That's best.
Cool. But they had only a few months to get it all together and create thousands of mandrels and all of those things.
Oh, my God. And so when I guess that helps a little bit when you're doing press tours and you've just shot the movie as opposed to...
Yeah.
What was it like working on this? I don't know. It was like 2 years ago of my
People
life.
People just want prank stories all the time. Were there any funny pranks? I'm like, I can't remember pranks.
Well, it's a weird question to ask because... You wouldn't, if someone worked in an office, you wouldn't be like, I bet you guys fuck with each other all the time. You're like, we have work to do. People have jobs. Like, there's a production that we're trying to keep.
We're like concentrating.
Yeah.
Although I will say, people farted a lot. I don't know if that's considered a prank.
I mean, that's the prank that always you always have at your disposal.
It's a trusty one. Yeah. Well, Jack certainly
really
could drop on demand.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Like right after action, there was one that is just lodged in my memory. It was like action, and we were like being scared of all these mandrels chasing us, and then you just hear him let rip. Like, not even trying to be quiet. And we're all, like, in close proximity, like, huddled together. Like, why would you do that to us?
Was it a comedy fart? Or was it just, like, this has to happen right now because...
He was, like, there's one in the chamber. So he warned us. And we were like, you're not going to drop it. You're not going to drop it. And then action dropped it.
I can't even do that in front of my wife. I can't imagine an entire film crew.
Oh, it was... Yeah, he was mic'd.
And do they have to? Do they have to? I guess if they yell "cut," is that funny? If someone says "cut" after someone farts?
Yeah, they had to because we were all dying.
Yeah,
like we couldn't breathe in, and also we're laughing. So
yeah,
they had to cut.
Yeah. So Jumanji, I'm trying to get a sense of your schedule because I'm trying to get a sense of how much time. It just seems like you go from thing to thing to thing, and then when you have time off, you write and direct something.
Yeah.
And then go back to working again.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it's been. I do try to take some downtime, maybe like a few days here and there. Because that's important, you know, to like have a life and get inspiration and then come back to whatever you're doing with that.
Yeah, but do you feel like... do you feel a sense of obligation, a sense of like, well, I'm getting so many great things coming my way now, I should take these now? Or do you just like that process? Do you just like the nonstop?
I think it's a little bit of both. I love working and I love acting. And so, I mean, when I'm not doing that, I feel a bit useless.
Right.
So I just love doing that all the time. And if I wasn't an actress, I'd be like in local theater groups, I think, just doing it for fun.
Right.
But also, yeah, there's a sense of momentum to it. And you're like, oh, I want to ride this wave. And you want to achieve certain things and you want to fight to get there. So there's that kind of fueling me as well.
Right. The short that you made, I guess maybe, I feel like it was maybe like 5 years ago, about the girl who goes to all the conventions.
Oh, conventional.
Yes. Was there a... Was that like a deep, dark fear? Were you like, oh my God, am I going to go to conventions for the rest of my life? Am I going to be the girl who was on that show? I mean, you must have known that that wouldn't happen.
I don't think it was really a fear of mine, to be honest. But like, I just knew that I had to make a horror film because I was making one for this scheme, Fun Size Horror.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of ideas and nothing was really sticking. And I was at a convention and I just looked around and I was like, what is the darkest version of where I am right now? And I was like, I'm going to do that. But it wasn't really a personal story, to be honest. Yeah, no. So luckily, that did not come from a deep, dark place. It just was kind of my imagination a little
bit. It was, but it's a good, but it's a real, it's a poignant message of just the person who like can't, who is so desperate for the fame and the recognition and the, that it actually ends up being the undoing of the character.
Yeah. And I think there's just something interesting about being defined by this one moment or thing that you did in your life. And then anything after that just doesn't compare. And you're always trying to get back to that thing when you were on top or you were at your peak. And it's just an interesting state of mind that I think anyone can really relate to.
They can, but what do you think is the... Because it's easy to see how something like that could happen because we have no control over what happens in the business. And sometimes it goes well and sometimes it doesn't. And there's no... And so is it... You know, I'm sure you've seen that happen to people before too. Is there advice that you have wanted to give people that you can't really say? But is there... You know, when someone is kind of smoldering in that, do you think they should just... try to ride it out or do something else, or I don't know, is there a right answer?
I mean, I think that you just have to be self-generating. Like, if you're not happy with where you are, you need to figure out what your next move is. And it might not be trying to go back to something, but evolving and moving on to the next thing and using that experience to create this new thing.
Right.
It's easier said than done, but I think like being self-generating and creating your own, I mean, carving your own path, really.
Right.
Like taking control and responsibility for that and not blaming the world or, you know, other things.
Of course. But it, I feel like now is such a good time to be working because there are so many outlets.
Yes. Yeah.
And I feel like even 20 years ago, if you were an actor, you were probably just an actor. And there were not a lot of leeway.
I know.
To do other things.
But in America, like more so than the UK, people do a lot of different jobs. they'll have a podcast and they'll be an actor and they'll be a stand-up comedian and all of these different things. It's right. kind of incredible to watch.
Right. Is there anything else you want to do that you haven't done?
No, I think I'll just act and then film other people acting. And that is my honestly my dream existence.
Do you want to do horror? Or do you want to do...
Yes. I want to be a horror director so badly.
But you know you can, I mean, you must have opportunities
yeah,
to do that.
Yeah, I do actually. So it's been amazing. Since I made my film, I keep getting sent loads of scripts to direct, which is amazing.
That's incredible.
And it's nice to see that there's an appetite for female directors too. Like people are trying to hire
Absolutely.
Them. I'm just not finding anything that I feel like I'm the person who needs to tell that story.
Right.
So I guess I'm just looking at other people's scripts and thinking about my own ideas. And I made another short earlier this year called The Hoarding, mm-hmm. which is a horror short film that I'll probably make into a feature next year, maybe.
Fantastic.
Set in a hoarder's house.
That's fantastic. So what type of horror do you like? Do you like sort of real life gritty stuff? Do you like, is there supernatural elements?
Shining is my favorite.
The Shining.
Got it.
Got it.
Yeah, I just love that. Kubrick is my favorite director. So it's stylish, it's artistic, but it's legitimately terrifying and mm-hmm. great performances. That type of horror.
Deep psychological trauma with a hint of supernatural. There's like a hint of supernatural.
Yeah, so you can still have fun ghosts around and good visuals, you know? Because we all want that.
Fun ghosts.
Fun ghosts. Yeah, those are the twins. That's what
I mean. What do you think is the good...
fun ghosts.
They're fun ghosts.
They are.
They're kids. They don't do anything. They just stand there.
Yeah.
You know?
Being like a little creepy.
Just a little creepy. Mm-hmm. But that's... I was talking to someone yesterday about the balance between... special effects, the balance with horror, how in the old days, like even in old Twilight Zone episodes that you watch, because they were limited by the effects that they had, that actually lent itself to the creepy factor because it was all the stuff you couldn't see.
Yeah, I think like obstacles like that are your friend when making films. So if you can't show something, you have to get really creative about how you're going to tell that story and what you can film. And so whenever I can't have something, I have a small tantrum and then I go, okay, what's a way around this? And then it's always better than what I originally wanted to do.
Right. Do you think, because I have some friends who are directors, obviously people that we know like James Gunn, who's done small films and also massive films successfully.
Yes.
But I have other friends, you know, like Rob Zombie, who's like, I don't ever want to direct a $100 million movie. He just likes the intimate nature of lower budget stuff. He feels it's more creative and then he has more control. No one can tell him what to do.
Yeah, I understand that instinct. I mean, taking on a giant movie like that, you're going to have a lot of people breathing down your neck. Although James Gunn very much asserts his creative voice over all of that. So he really has mastered making a giant movie and making it something that he actually wants to make himself. And
right.
It's individual.
Yeah. But with your schedule... I guess the bigger film, like if you take on a bigger film, that's going to dominate more of your time. It's going to eat up, you know, I mean, you know, we have a ton of friends who are like, I directed a movie and I spent 2 years on it and I didn't have time to do anything else.
Yeah, definitely. I guess, yeah, that would be quite a commitment. So it would need to be the right film that I'm willing to not be an actress for years of my life.
How do you multitask? Because you must have situations where you're working on one thing, but maybe you have edits for something else that you have to turn in or you're preparing for something else. You're trying to mash like 3 or 4 things on top of each other.
That happens all the time. So earlier this year, I was shooting Jumanji and another film, Gunpowder Milkshake, and editing my short film at the same time.
Oh my God.
Doing it on the weekends and stuff. You know, you just fit it in when you can.
Yeah. What is good advice that you have about editing? Because to me, that's always the scariest part. Like, how do you know when you're so close to a project? How do you know this is the right cut for this? This is the right shot. This timing makes sense. This will make sense to someone who's never seen this before.
I mean, to me, it's just all instincts and it's trust in yourself. Like, if
God
it feels
it.
Right, it's probably right.
Ah, yeah, but instincts, not everyone has those.
Well, that's an issue in the artistic realm of directing.
Was directing something when you were younger, and you were watching film, did you watch with a director's eye or did you watch with a performer's eye?
Probably a performer's because I wanted to be an actress. But now I watch very much from a directing standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. It's so cool to just watch and sort of see the timing of their edits and their shots and whether they're wide or close or all of that, you know.
Everyone has a little bit different of an answer, but what do you think a director's job is?
I think probably having vision and then having enough leadership skills to implement it, and and compiling a team of talented people and then letting them do what they do, but steering the ship.
Right.
You have to steer that ship towards your vision.
Right.
Because I think if you let other people steer it and get involved in that part of the job, then you might dilute your vision,
sure.
which happens all the time on movies. And that's maybe why they're less individual.
Yeah, but I'm always interested in the balance between when it's good to assert your vision and then when it's good to compromise.
Yeah.
Like when, because sometimes, oh, people do have good ideas. And sometimes like, oh, you know, maybe I don't know everything. I don't know. Like, so how do you... Is it really just, it's just a gut game? You just sort of go, well, this is what I'm feeling, so I hope for the best.
Yeah, I think it is, to be honest. And sometimes people are going to be like, what if you did it like this? And that's a better way to do it. And you have to think really fast and listen to your gut and think, is that a better way to do it? And, you know, and then you have to really like get your ego in check.
Right.
And be like, you know what? Yeah, you are right. And I was wrong there. Let's do what you said. There's a lot of that in directing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And with the first short that you did, what because I imagine each thing that you do, you're going to learn a clump of things.
Yeah.
Because everything is basically, you're in school every time you make something.
Yeah,
so
it's so true.
What did you learn the first time versus the second time?
Oh, the first time I ever directed?
Yeah.
I guess that was around conventional time or a short that I did before that. Oh, what did I learn? I don't, you know... So many things. How to run a crew, how to keep people moving, how to get the shots that you want. All the basics, I think, the first time.
Right.
Of, like, what this job actually involves.
Right.
The last time, I think starting to make bolder choices and really figure out who I am as a filmmaker and my identity and not just making the obvious choice, but making something that is interesting to me that I haven't seen before. I am striving to do that, not for the sake of it, but I think it is still good to strive to do things in a different way.
Right, right, right. And so do you think that's in the idea itself being wildly original, or do you think taking a concept that putting a different spin on something?
I would say probably the latter, because a lot of stories have been told before. It's all in the way that you tell them.
Yeah.
And I think if you're directing something, you have been chosen to be the director for a reason. And so let's see that reason, you know?
Right, right. And do you, now that, let's see, what's the day today? We're almost at Christmas time. We're almost at the end of the year.
Are we?
The business is kind of slowing down right now. It is slow. It really, like, after Thanksgiving, the business is like, okay, we'll see you January 4th.
I know, you really check out after Thanksgiving. I'm like, guys, there's a whole other month.
There's like 6 more weeks, you guys. 6 more weeks. December is sort of a dead month. Yeah. Do you have a little bit of time off?
No. So we're promoting Jumanji right now. So we're just out and about. And then I'm promoting that until next week. And then I go back to Scotland. And then I have some time off.
Then you have a little bit of time off.
Yeah, so I've got like a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks.
Yeah, and it's going to be amazing.
And then what happens in Scotland in a couple of weeks? Like, is it...
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to see my friends. I'm going to go to the local pantomime. Do you know what that is?
No.
What?
I don't. I'm not. I don't. I haven't.
Every year at Christmas in the UK, we'll do like a fairy tale show. And it's the most popular thing in theatre in the UK. And it happens every year. And there's all these rules and audience interactions and all of that stuff.
And it's pantomime?
Yeah, it's called The Pantomime, and this year in Inverness, it's Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
And it's local performers, usually, and there's always a dame, which is a man dressed as a woman who does like a comedy stand-up sort of act in the middle of the story.
Okay.
And there's songs and dances.
There are. So it's not like a pantomime, it's not like a mime, it's just called The Pantomime.
Nothing to do with mime.
But it's comedy skewed.
Yeah, it's like an old-fashioned fairy tale with, like, slapstick comedy and songs and...
I didn't know anything about this.
Well, this is wild because it's so huge in the UK. Like, it's everything.
Okay.
Like, it means everything to me. Everything.
I'm so sorry.
God, I didn't know. You've got to Google this.
The only thing... The one thing I knew about Edinburgh is the Fringe Festival. But other, that's than, pretty other, cool. other than that,
it's not as cool as pantomimes.
No, okay, okay.
No, nothing is. I used to audition for the local pantomime in Inverness growing up, and I would never get in.
I feel like I your chances always... are pretty good now if you wanted to.
Maybe this is my moment. I can approach them. Can you imagine? What are you doing next? Pantomime.
I'm doing pantomime. I'm going to do some pantomime. Yeah, but I mean, you know, like that's, I think those things are important. The dreams you have when you're a kid, you kind of get to go. You got to, maybe one year you do kind of step in and do a pantomime. Do a
yeah,
character.
I would really love that. But I do go to see it every year. It's my tradition, and I feel at my happiest when I'm there.
Oh, that's
because
nice.
Because it reminds me of why I wanted to be an actress.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's cool.
Is it, how are you handling all, I mean, you know, you're like a big friggin' movie star type now. Like, but you are. Like, people know, like, you know, you're in these massive franchise movies and people love you and is it do you still feel your life is normal? Has it
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think I'm a movie star. I think I star in movies.
Right.
But I don't think I'm a movie star, which is a really interesting place to be in my career. Like, I can walk around.
That's fantastic.
It's amazing.
Well, also, it doesn't screw with your head.
No, I mean, I love just going out on my own. I love doing stuff on my own, you know, going for coffees or going to the cinema or dinners even or trips. And so to not be able to do that would be a really weird existence. I can't imagine it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where people start to go a little crazy.
Yeah. Just surrounded by security all the time.
Well, also, like, I don't think we're evolved to be watched all the time. Like, that feels uncomfortable.
No. Yeah. That must be what animals feel like in the zoo.
Of course. I mean, I don't think most people feel bad for celebrities, but which is totally understandable. But but at the same time, I think it's a more surreal existence than most people would guess. Of just like,
yeah, I can't imagine what it's like for someone like Kevin Hart or Dwayne Johnson.
Right,
that's just a whole other level.
Yeah, like if they're in an elevator and they pick their nose, and then someone's like, oh, "The Rock picked his nose," and then it becomes a thing.
His nose.
Yeah. But I feel like The Rock's probably. I feel like he's probably used to it by now.
I think so, but you know what interests me is like, when do they actually become that huge of a star? Like, can you pinpoint a moment, or is it like grains of sand and how much of that then turns into a desert? Like, there's no way to really, it's always an interesting thing.
I think it's probably a combination of both. It is very, because especially in his case, he was a big wrestling star, like massive wrestling star.
Huge, yeah.
And it, like, wrestling stars crossing over to film, not totally, wasn't really happening a ton on that level.
No, yeah.
But and then he was in that movie, Be Cool, which was a sequel to Get Shorty.
Ah!
And he was really funny in it.
Yeah.
And I think people were like, holy shit,
this guy is really funny.
He's really funny.
Yeah.
And then he starts doing the next thing, and movie opens, it does well. Oh, okay, people do want to see this guy in a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden,
you're the biggest movie star in the world.
The giantest movie star in the world.
But he's so comedically talented, and I feel like people don't talk about that enough, because there's so many other things to talk about with him. But, like, his talent is incredible. Just watching him, I'm, like, in awe. It's amazing.
I do think that sometimes the public or the press or whatever is keen to put people in boxes, because I think it's just easy to sort that way.
Yeah, definitely.
As opposed to, especially now, I feel like, well, people are lots of things, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you do action, but you do horror, and you direct, and you write, and you know, it's not, you don't just do one thing.
Right.
And I feel like that's also a relatively new thing in the business as well.
Yeah, multi-hyphenates.
Multi-hyphenates.
That's what they're calling it.
maybe it's like you look at J.J. Abrams, and you're like, how did that, you know, that guy is a whole industry by
that's
himself.
That's insane. Yeah, that's what I want to do with horror. What can we call my horror company? I was thinking like Gillen House of Horror. But I think it's a little long-winded
Gillen
and self-indulgent.
Gillen House
Gillen
is cool.
Gillen House, like Blumhouse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Shit. Oh, damn.
Yeah, it's too close to Blum.
Gillen Manor.
Yeah, Gillen Manor.
Gillen Manor.
Gillen's Haunted Manor of Nightmares.
Karen's Time.
Karen Time. I'm so glad we'd had this conversation and we found the perfect name for the company. Thank you.
You know what's fun about Karen Time is that it's a relatively non-threatening sounding thing. Yeah, it's Karen Time.
Yeah. Well, which could be quite sinister if all I make is horror films.
Well, there's a meme that's been developing on the internet slowly, which is that the name Karen is the lady who always asks to speak to the manager?
Yes. And by the way, I have done that in my life.
So you're like a textbook Karen.
I'm a real Karen.
You're a real Karen.
I did it in a gym once when they wouldn't let my mum cancel a gym membership. And I was like, excuse me, I'd like to speak to the manager. And she was like, I am the manager. And I looked like such an idiot. I was like, oh, well, great. Well, I guess that's sorted then. Goodbye.
Well, I'm a displeased Karen.
Yeah, that's right.
We have a wild Karen in the front.
Yep.
Were you able to get them to refund the...
I believe not. I believe the contract stated fair and square that she wasn't able to terminate her contract at that point.
Don't you think it would be kind of funny if you marched in there now and be like, I would like to speak to the manager?
It wasn't very long ago. It was only a couple of years back.
And the woman's still like, I'm still the manager. Good yeah. then. Well,
good
I'm
for you.
Glad. I just wanted to make sure everything was in order. Yeah, all right.
I looked so stupid. The worst.
I don't know why, but I always felt the need. I always wanted. There was something that I was very kind of embarrassed about that I always wanted to tell you. That
tell
I was,
me.
I was just felt like such an idiot about. Because you noticed when you came in, you saw the TARDIS and the log cabin and everything.
Yeah.
And this basically was recreated from a house that I had renovated many years ago. Mm-hmm. And we were hanging out, and I said, hey, I want to show you the renovations in my house. And you go, great. And as we were walking through, I'm like, oh, I put this here. In the back of my head, I was like, oh, fuck, there's a TARDIS downstairs.
Did you forget that the TARDIS was there?
I forgot the TARDIS was there because it was new. And when we came down and I showed it to you, I was like, this poor girl is going to think I'm a fucking lunatic. I wanted to show you the TARDIS. I was so embarrassed and I didn't know how to say, like, look. Yes, I'm a fan of that show, but okay, I know this looks weird. You know, I was so embarrassed.
You know, that's the perfect beginning for a horror movie, actually. I'm in this log cabin. I'm seeing a TARDIS.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, this could go weird.
But you are the murderer, ultimately.
Yes, I like that twist.
Yeah,
I lure people into their own TARDISes, and then I kill them.
I just always felt bad about that. I'm like, you know, because, look, you knew I was a fan of that show.
Oh, I knew.
That's how we met.
I wasn't surprised by the TARDIS at all.
I'm so glad.
No, it was a nice trip down memory lane.
Okay, good. So you didn't think it was crazy. You were just like, okay, this all tracks.
No, I didn't think it was crazy. The second TARDIS, I'm sorry. To wonder about though.
Okay.
The replica.
Well, all right. Well, just the. Oh, actually, the one from the other house, we moved to the house that we live in, which is.
Okay. How many TARDISes are there?
There are two.
Okay.
Yeah.
But one of them just teleported over somewhere.
It teleported to the other house, which, by the way, was my wife's doing. I was like, we do not.
I'm glad that she let you keep the TARDIS.
She asked for the TARDIS.
Oh!
So she said, we have to put this.
That's the perfect woman for you.
Yeah.
She asked for the TARDIS.
And I was fully willing to be like, I will put this in storage.
Oh, that's quite the sacrifice.
It would have been the sacrifice, but I was not required to.
That's amazing.
To put that in storage.
Good.
But no, so here, yeah, I had another one. I had another one recreated. But I love that you embrace it. You know, like, it's nice that you embrace it, because I see you post stuff sometimes.
I love it. I never want to be disassociated with the show, because it was the best time ever. Best years of my life.
Oh, that's good.
I think. Hopefully, I'll have better years. But so far, those really top it for me.
Right.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And do you think it's just because everything was so new and you didn't really know, like, you were just basically playing dress up in a fun sci-fi thing, and then all of a sudden it just became this phenomenon.
Yeah, exactly that. I was 21. I got cast in the biggest show in the UK, which was such a wild experience. And also, two of my best friends were in the show, and we were all really young and just kind of high on life, and everything was new. And it's like, it'll never be like that again, that moment in time. It was really special for all of us.
That's really nice.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, because it seems like in the older days, you know, if someone was on that show, they became very associated with that show.
Yeah.
And it was sometimes difficult to break out and do other things.
Yeah, for sure.
And yet, here we are, you know, Tennant is doing a million and a half things. He was amazing in Good Omens.
He's killing it.
Arthur was doing amazing stuff on Broadway.
Yeah, I just saw him in a play in London the other day.
Matt is in a tiny little show called The Crown, which apparently...
Never heard of it.
I don't know what it's about.
No.
I think there's a crown
it's about crowns.
Involved. I'm not really... I think it's a... Is it like a dental crown?
Oh, everyone gets yeah, maybe he's a dentist.
Yeah, so, I mean, good luck with that. I mean, if that, if anyone ever sees that.
Yeah, he's trying.
And then you're... Do you talk to those guys much?
All the time.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I just went to London and I saw both of their plays in the space of 2 days.
Oh, Matt's doing a play too?
Yeah, he just finished. So I saw Arthur's play at the National Theatre and he was amazing. And then I saw Matt's play with Claire Foy, also from The Crown.
Fantastic.
Those guys together, they are very good.
That's good.
Yeah, they make a good team.
It's nice because it's in a way, it's... Doctor Who was almost like... school, like you guys were in school together,
yeah.
And then everyone graduated, and you've all gone off in these amazing.
I know we fled the nest.
You did.
It's kind of sad. I think we should all come back for one episode
of Doctor Who.
Yeah, but maybe we can't, right? Because it's moved on now. So maybe we do like an episode of something else.
Or I mean, the thing about Doctor Who, though. is that there's every fan of that show knows like there are rules. That are easily broken.
Of course. It's sci-fi. You can't apply logic to that.
You can't apply logic to that. We know that when a show's been on since, 1963 or whatever, that it is...
Yes.
There are going to be some things that are going to step on the toes of other things, so...
Of course. There's paradoxes everywhere.
Have you thought maybe... Would you want to direct them in something?
That would be amazing.
Maybe that's the thing.
Maybe it could be a horror movie.
Maybe it's a horror movie.
Oh my God, I'm actually going to do this.
Oh, this is fantastic news.
All right, I just need a story. That's all.
This movie from Karen Time Productions.
Yes!
Is going to be spectacular.
Look out for it.
Do you force yourself to write every day or create every day? Or are you the type of person that needs to wait for inspiration to strike?
No, I don't force myself. I'm not regimented in that respect. But when I'm working on something, I'm just like obsessed with it. And I'll go all day and all night. And as long as other people are willing to work with me on it.
Right,
like
right,
editors
right.
and composers and all of that. But I just become like completely immersed in it when I'm doing it. And then I can step away for a while. So I think I have a balance of sorts.
Right.
Yeah.
And then when you are up against, I always like to ask creative folks, like when you're up against the wall of like, I can't squeeze any more ideas out of my brain. I'm tapped. Do you step away? Do you push through? Do you phone a friend? Like what is your...
I usually take a walk and listen to music and see if anything comes to me. And usually it does.
Really?
Yeah. Getting outside, I think, helps. Change of scenery. But I think just going away and having an experience is always a good thing to kind of change your perspective in some way in that moment.
Is there any good horror you've seen lately that you really like?
Oh, okay. What have I been watching? I must have seen horror. What was the last horror I saw? I don't remember.
I don't.
Dr. Sleep.
Oh, you saw Dr. Sleep?
Yeah, it was good.
You liked it?
Yeah, I did. Did you?
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No.
You have a picture of Jack Nicholson outside.
I know. But he died in the first one.
Sorry, what?
I'm
spoilers.
Sorry.
Spoilers!
Karen, I'm sorry. Shit, I thought you said...
Jesus Christ.
Well, he doesn't sort of die. He does. He kind of stays in the hotel.
Right.
Oh, God damn it.
Well,
I'm
maybe
so
he'll
sorry.
Come back as a wee ghost or something, Dr. Sleep
was when that movie came out. I was touring, and then by the time I got back.
So you missed the window. Well, you watch it. Are you excited about it?
I am very excited about it.
Yeah, that's Mike Flanagan, who I worked with on Oculus.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
which
same
I've
director.
Seen.
Yeah,
loved
you've seen
Oculus.
That one.
Oculus is fun.
Yeah.
You honestly, it seems like. There's just this great playground right now for you. And then the challenge is like what to play with next. Like how do you decide what gets your attention next?
I mean, it depends on what comes my way. If nothing comes my way that sparks my interest, I will make a horror film. That's basically my overall plan.
Yeah.
And I really want to make a horror film next year. You're making me so excited about this. You're not even saying anything.
With Matt Smith and Arthur Darvill.
That or other people.
Or
it depends on whether they're right for the parts that I have in mind, because I do have a little idea brewing.
I think it would be fun, just for fun, to make them audition. You know, maybe you're already going to give it to them, but don't tell them that.
Can you imagine if I made them audition and then they didn't get it? Wouldn't that be such a weird twist to our friendship?
The really fucked up twist would be is that if you put on the breakdowns, I'm looking for a Matt Smith type.
Yes.
He auditions for it and then you give it to someone else.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Matt. Shia LaBeouf, quite frankly, he just
really
knocked it out of the park in the room.
Nailed the Matt Smith more than you did.
Get the accent and everything. Yeah.
I'd love to see him in a horror film. Not Shia. I mean, also Shia, but mainly Matt.
But mainly Matt.
I think that he would do really well in that genre.
Matt would be amazing in that
genre.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you even consider, like, this massive upheaval in the business in terms of, like, streaming services versus, like, things that are movies in the theaters, things that are movies on our screens, but now there's all these streaming services and who knows where media is going to shake out and who's going to make what for what.
It's a crazy time.
Do you even think about that stuff, or do you just think, well, I'm just going to make stuff and wherever it comes out, it comes out?
No, I think about it because it's just interesting to me to learn about our industry and the way it's moving and how it's been totally shaken up by streaming services. I do think about where things would end up, and I do like the idea of a theatrical release. But the streaming services are doing that too.
Right.
So ideally both, you know, that would be great.
Yeah. I mean, it's strange because they're so competitive with each other now that it seems like, it feels like the direction everything is going is that one day some device is going to come along and it's basically just going to be like cable, but it's going to have all those apps on it. And
I mean, that sounds like an Apple device.
Maybe.
Right?
If they can, you know, like, make deals with everyone.
Well, this is the thing, because when I was thinking about that, trying to predict where it's all headed, I'm like, well, Apple's got the sort of monopoly on the devices and on which we're watching these things.
Right.
So they could just phase out all the other services and only have their own, which they are starting.
Right.
They just need to make some cooler stuff.
Well, that's the thing, is that there was a brief period of time where the Amazon Prime app was on Apple TV, and then I think it disappeared.
They're starting already. This is it.
If I'm wrong about that, I apologize, but I thought I heard that, like, oh, now that's not anywhere because they're all disappearing. So I hope that the consumers don't suffer because of all of the business wars and everyone's trying to own all the IP and, like,
I feel like it'll go in a way that, like, Disney has kind of, like, been buying up everything.
Right.
Maybe, like, Apple will start buying up all the other ones, so we'll still get that content. It just might be, like, under their umbrella.
Right. Amazon could do that. Amazon could literally buy everything.
Yeah. That's wild that they haven't.
Multiple times over, Amazon could.
But I also think that everything has a time limit. Because it's like, I don't think things, like, can take over for such a long time and then stay like that. I think that people kind of evolve and move on.
Right.
So I think even if Apple did that, it wouldn't be forever.
Well, you also can't predict what people are going to adopt.
I know.
Like, what types of devices, like, the experiences that people want to have.
Yeah, like, what's after the iPhone? Like, where do we go from there?
Well, I think it's all wearable technology. Like, it's technology that integrates.
What about spectacles? What are your thoughts on those?
I love the idea of it, but so far they just look like weird sci-fi. They just look like 1950s sci-fi.
Like big goggles.
They're just big goggles and weird.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, like device neck that people are getting, you know, from, like, leaning into their devices.
Is that why my neck hurts all the time?
It's very possible.
Because it does.
Yeah, well, it's probably...
I thought it was getting older, but maybe it's not.
No, it's because your head's probably craned down looking at your phone all the time.
Oh, it hurts.
Yeah, that's probably why. You gotta get a foam roller. You gotta travel with a foam roller.
Really?
Yeah, and then you can, like, lay on the foam roller and it kind of stretches your...
Maybe, like, hold up the phone like that.
In a different way. Yes, exactly.
We need phone holders.
A neck, like something that sprouts off your neck and just holds the phone
in front of...
Yeah,
it's like a neck collar, and then it has like a selfie stick coming out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's right there in your eyeline.
I mean, anything more to distract people from driving, I say, is what we
need. Yeah, that's always good.
But I think it's because the machines essentially force us to interface like machines. Like, we are like robots, the way that we have to type and stare at a device. And so I think it's... Technology is going to seamlessly have to integrate into... You know, there's going to have to, like, natural technology.
Convenience. It's always about that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, how can we make this easier?
Yeah. Or AR. Like, how do we integrate it into life so that you're not, you don't have to look at a device. It just appears before your eyes. Yeah. That's so messed up, though.
That is messed up.
God, I don't know.
Well, it happens with Siri. That's just the beginning. Siri, or no, like, Alexa.
Yeah.
You just shout to the heavens. You don't even need to shout. Speak.
I'm just not... Do you have an Alexa?
I did, and then I got scared that it was broadcasting all of my conversations.
Of course! That's why we don't have one.
Yeah.
Like, what if you're talking shit about someone, and then it goes, dialing, and then it calls that person, and they just hear you talking shit about
them. Yeah. And I love... juice. I love the gossip.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to restrict that in my own home.
But you don't want to be part of the gossip either. Yeah, exactly. You don't want to broadcast
that. No, I
want
to talk
that.
About other people's
gossip.
Yeah, of
course.
I love it.
It just feels like we're so obsessed with convenience that we don't even know what we're agreeing to most of the time.
I know.
We're like, sure, put this device in here.
Yes.
And in the fine print, it's like, we can eavesdrop on all your conversations and we own everything that you say. And
oh my God, what's happening to the world?
Well, we just want everything now. We're creatures of convenience. Do you have a bug out plan someday where you're like, you know, if everything goes really sideways, I'm just going to move to the mountains of Scotland? Or like, is there an escape plan at some point?
I think, like, going back to your Instagram thing, I would go to a castle in Scotland.
Yeah.
And just detach and think about the times when I was an actress in Hollywood and talk about that to my grandkids.
Yeah.
Before it all went wrong because I said something and the Alexa broadcast and ruined my career. And that's my story.
Alexa takes down another. Oh, that's the thing, is that Alexa's, you know, if Alexa's on the side of big media.
Yeah, she could turn on us.
Just eavesdropping on everyone. Yeah, I have a friend who works on a show that he got rid of his Alexa. He's like, I work on a show that can't get spoiled. So if I'm talking about things that are on the show, like near my Alexa... You know.
Wait, so this is a real threat.
I mean, I don't know how real it is or if I'm just being paranoid, but I don't think it's impossible, you know?
Of course not. If it can listen to you,
yeah,
then it can record you.
Well, I've turned off the thing on the phone where you can activate it by saying, hey, Siri.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because if you say something that's even close to hey, Siri, and then it starts listening, and then you say someone's name and it calls that.
I didn't even think about Siri.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about Alexa. There's two we've got to think about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can disable Siri to the point where it isn't listening for its name, and that it only works when you have the phone unlocked.
What happens right now? My phone is locked.
Yeah.
Hey, Siri.
Okay, so it didn't... But if you plug it in, I don't have a phone charger in here. But
yeah.
Oh, you do. Yeah. If you plug it in, sometimes it might be when it's plugged in and charging.
Hey, Siri. Siri.
Don't you do it, Siri.
But I don't know. This is scaring me.
Yeah.
I will keep that charge if that's all right.
Yeah, yeah. You can keep charge of the phone. Maybe is there a technology thriller from Karen Time Films in the future?
I don't love technology in films, actually.
No?
I like watching Black Mirror.
Yeah.
But for me, I don't think it's for me.
No. Because that's just not part of your storytelling.
I'm not that into it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to see written texts on film. I want to see visuals.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it would be for me, but I don't mind watching it done by other people.
It is also in horror. It's an interesting thing to get around because... Everything is so accessible now that a lot of horror directors have to come up with reasons for, like, they're in a campsite and they don't have service.
Yeah,
so
horror is so difficult now. Like, why would you not just call the police with this device that you have already in your hand at all times?
I have a hard time with found footage because I always think, like, put the camera down! Your friend just got hit with an axe! Yeah. What are you doing? Why are you still filming this?
That is actually ridiculous.
There are a couple of tropes that I just can't.
We need to find new explanations, I think.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
there's in horror, there are so many different points where a horror movie can lose you. It can be in the performance, or it can be in the gags, or it can be in the mechanism of the film.
Yeah.
So what do you think are the important pieces to keep a good, solid horror story intact?
I think honoring the logic of the whole thing is important, and also just suspense and build up and timing, kind of like comedy in a way, the setup and the payoff.
Yeah.
I think if you get that right, then you're in a good position.
Yeah.
I think. But you really have to pay it off if you set it up. And it's difficult because it's hard to make things actually scary when you see them.
Of course.
Right?
And also with horror too, because a lot of it's not high budget. Like, maybe you couldn't get that shot that day.
Yeah, or like the prosthetics for the monster and, you know, all of those things.
Yeah.
It's difficult. It was hard in my short film because I have a little bit of a cheeky monster in there. I don't know why I used the word
cheeky. He was listed in the credits as cheeky monster.
He wasn't.
Oh, next time.
No, next time.
Next time. What are you excited about right now? Like, what is making you happy? How are you staying fulfilled and, you know, in your crazy nonstop work schedule?
Ah, good question.
Yeah.
What is it? I think just being creative is probably it.
Good.
Like, I do that, and then I go out, and then I make more stuff, and then I go out, and that's it.
That's pretty much it.
And I could do that for the rest of my life, and I'd be like, yeah, I did that right for me.
Well, that's really healthy because it... So many people, I think, get so caught up in the pursuit of the next thing or keeping this or not losing that. I mean, it's all that kind of ego stuff that you referenced before that can really topple people. And, you know, you see people that seemingly have everything. They just seem like dead inside and empty.
Well, yeah, because that's not the thing that's going to make you happy. But you don't realize that at the time, you know. But when you get it, the goalposts move all the time.
Right.
So if you get it, it's like, what's the next thing? You know, I don't think anyone really ever sits back and goes like, okay, did it, done.
Yeah.
You know, there's always something more. And so therefore, that's not where the happiness comes from.
Yeah. And it's hard to see it because I don't think anyone ever feels different.
Mm.
Like, especially when your circumstances change, I don't think people, they still feel like that same person from when they were first starting out.
It's true. And everything's temporary. Like the high of achieving something or getting something isn't going to last forever. It's a temporary high.
Right. How did you learn that? Was it just something that you innately knew or?
No, I think I've just been watching a lot of YouTube interviews with tech moguls and like seeing them sell something for $1 billion, which is obviously like a lot of people's dream. And then they say that they're happy for about 4 days and then it goes back to normal.
Right.
Because it's the new reality.
So it is really about the... Is it the embracing the process stuff or just figuring out, you know, like you...
I think it's, yeah, sort of, I think personally for me, it's like sort of deciding that I am enough and worthy of all of these things without needing validation outside of myself.
Oh my God, that's incredible. I mean, like that's the that is the most valuable lesson that anyone I think could ever learn.
Yeah, but I'm working on it. I haven't fully achieved that, you know, and I think we all need to work on that consistently.
Well, no, but yeah, I mean, but there are like, I mean, you look back at the history of philosophy, there were philosophers who were old men who were like, I'm still trying to, you know, like I don't think it's ever, I wonder if maybe sometimes we have this false cinematic idea that like the goalpost, like I'm just going to cross it and then it's all going to be
then
fixed.
It's done. Yeah.
No, it's never. You always have to remind yourself of that, you know, for always.
I know. It's interesting to sort of reach that place of total happiness. And I don't know if anyone really does, do they?
I don't know. Because I think people chase happiness like a drug.
Yeah.
Like it's some sort of a spike that you're supposed to feel.
Yeah.
Rather than just a state of like peace and contentment.
Yeah. Those are better words, I think, than happiness. Well, they are, because happiness, you can't be that all the time because emotions come in waves and they spike and then they drop. And of course they do because we're humans.
Right.
But to be content and at peace is another thing. And I think that we can strive towards that.
Man, that is just such an incredible, it's just an incredible thing to know. And it makes me happy that you know that because, you know, it does because I, you know, you're just such a great, I consider you a friend.
Aww.
And I've always Ross just thought you're such a great person and so inspiring with all the different stuff that you do.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And it makes me happy that you're happy. Like, it makes me happy that you're at a place where not only is the career stuff going well, but you're, but you as a person, as Karen, are really not asking to speak to the manager. Like, you're just speaking, that you seem
no,
generally...
No, I'm always going to ask to speak to the goddamn manager.
But that you seem at peace with it is good, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I'm not exempt from those moments where I'm like, I wish I had achieved this by now. Like, I have those moments, but then I come back from them because I can remember what we just talked about.
Right. Do you read any philosophy, or do you...
All I read is psychology essays.
You do?
Yeah, that's all I read.
Is there a site that you like or particular essays that you enjoy that people
Psychology
should...
Today?
Psychology
now?
Today, yeah.
Yeah, just whatever I can find on Google.
Yeah.
Just looking into... conditions or all sorts of weird things.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting and helpful for acting, you know?
Well, and also I would imagine for the storytelling too, especially
with
horror.
Motivation, character motivations. That's where it really comes into play.
So besides people looking to external sources to find happiness rather than figuring out how to just be happy with themselves, what are some of the psychological trends of the day that you're noticing?
Like in today's society?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can think of any specific to today. I mean, we have social media, which is certainly having an effect on that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's particularly different to what we would already do as humans. We're looking for validation from people.
Right. But on a weird, messed up scale.
Well, yeah, it's just amplified. But I don't know that it's like very different. Like, I think that it's the same as wanting to be popular in high school.
Right.
But it's just on a different platform and there's more people involved.
Yeah, I can't even imagine being a kid today. And I was talking to a friend of mine about who has a bit of a social media following. And I was like, I can't. When you were a kid, it was challenging enough to just sort of fit into your immediate community. But, you know, like in that community, you were fitting into a smaller group, or you were trying to figure out your place in a smaller group. Mm. And now it's like, you're competing with the world.
Yeah, that's the issue.
And a fake heightened version of the world.
Yeah, I mean, the comparison aspect of it is scary because you're looking at people's lives that aren't necessarily real and you're comparing it to your own life, and it can suddenly make everything seem much more miserable than it might have had you not seen that on social media.
Right.
So that's a new effect, I think.
I hope someday you are comfortable enough to give a talk about stuff like that. Because I think, really? Yeah, because I think people would listen to you, and I think young people would really... I think you could affect the world in very positive ways if you shared some of these ideas, because I think people do listen to you, and kids...
Should I do a TED Talk?
You could do a TED Talk.
That'd be really scary, but I'm into it.
Okay, you could do a Karen Talk.
Yeah, or Karen Time Talk. It's another branch of my horror studio.
But it is, you know, like it is helpful to people. And I think it's when people do have healthy perspectives on, especially when celebrities have healthy perspectives on this stuff.
Yeah.
Because kids look to people like you and they go, oh, she must have everything figured out. And to say like, hey, no, I don't have everything figured out. But these are some of the things that and you shouldn't also worry about X, Y, or Z. I just think people would probably go like, oh, okay, maybe I am enough and I don't need to worry about all that crap.
Yeah, I would love it if I could make someone feel like that.
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
What's next? You're here today. Are you doing anything else today? Or you get to
I have
go home?
One more phone interview and then I'm done.
Done for the day.
Done for the day. For the week.
What?
And then more press next week, then back to Scotland.
Then you're going back to Scotland.
Yes.
Is it more US press, or do you have to go to another country?
No, it's US.
You're just in the US
in
press.
In Los Angeles.
Fantastic.
Exciting.
Is there anything else you want to promote? Is there anything else?
Call of the Wild, mm-hmm. a film that I am in with a dog and Harrison Ford, is coming out at the end of February, and it's really good. I can't believe I put the dog before Harrison Ford.
You have to. It's funnier that way.
I didn't even mean to.
Starring a dog, in parentheses, and Harrison
and
Ford.
Harrison Ford.
And Harrison Ford. He was on the podcast like 6-7 years ago.
He was?
And it was rough.
Wow. It was rough.
It
Why?
Was rough. Because he was like, I blame me. Mm. But he was sort of like...
I blame me.
I blame
Why?
Me.
Why?
Because he was... I think he used to kind of do this thing where he was sort of like, he would kind of play this character of sort of a grumpy guy.
Oh.
You know, just to fuck with people. Mm-hmm. But maybe there was a little bit of that too. And I just, the fandom, I just devolved into the fandom so fast. I mean,
really?
Well, he's Harrison Ford.
Of course.
You know, it's like there's one.
I don't blame you.
Yeah. I mean, it's like some people, it's like the first time I got to work with a Muppet. And it was like, how could I not just like tear up? Because it's like, it's so
it's
molecular
yeah.
into your childhood.
Yeah.
And that was him. And it was just like, I just kind of melted down. I mean, it wasn't a disaster.
I'm going to go home and listen to this.
You're fine if you don't.
I'm going to.
It's a little awkward.
I
want
to hear a full meltdown.
But but my feeling was like, look, I should have been more emotionally prepared. Like, if he's going to give me his time, which is very valuable,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like, you know, like riding a horse. I should have been able to ride that horse that I got on. You know what
Cut
I mean?
Cut yourself some slack.
I don't know.
You're allowed to have those moments.
I don't know. It was.
I was fangirling over him when I was shooting the movie.
I think something happened, and you know, because he had the plane crash scare.
I know. I talked to him about that.
You did?
Yeah.
Well, after that, I noticed, like, when I would see him on panels at Comic-Con, I don't know if it had anything to do with it, but when he came back for the Force Awakens panel, he was genuinely touched. He seemed genuinely happy to be there.
New perspective.
He had a new perspective. He seemed excited to talk about Star Wars.
Yeah,
like,
wow.
He seemed appreciative of the fans.
Maybe it changed him.
I wonder if it did.
I mean, it's a scary thing to happen. I'm sure it must have.
Yeah. I can't believe you talked to him about it.
Yeah, I tried to make a joke about it.
You did?
Yeah, because I don't know why I thought that would be funny. Oh, my God. And he didn't find it funny. I just, you know when you're like, why? Why have I done that to Harrison Ford?
Because sometimes there's nervous energy and you kind of want to break up the tension.
Yeah, but you know, he was talking about it in a kind of casual way, which led me to believe that it was a safe space to make a joke about it.
Sure.
But then the reaction let me know that it was too soon to be making jokes about that.
You don't have to, but what was, I'll even cut it out if
you want. I don't know if I even remember, but I was like laughing. I don't remember what I said. But he sort of let me know that that wasn't something that he was casual about.
And so you also had an awkward moment with Harrison Ford. So how did you get out of yours? Were you just like, well, I'll see you tomorrow? Or was it a...
Well, we were all sitting together in the green room. So there was like nowhere to go, really. So I think I just changed the subject. Maybe talked about other planes. I don't know. Just couldn't quite get off the plane topic.
You know, Amelia Earhart. No, that's a bad one. Shit. That's when you need to carry a pocket full of smoke bombs.
And just set one off.
Boom, and then you disappear.
Just run away.
That's all you need to do. That's all you need to do. You carry a pocket full of smoke bombs. And Karen Time Films, which I'm very excited, is definitely going to be the name of your company.
Oh, definitely. Okay, good, copyrighted.
Good. But I honestly, you know, I cannot thank you enough for... I even felt bad. I was like, oh my God, you were at the premiere last night. You were in this country Sunday, another country Saturday, another... Oh. It's so nice of you to come sit
down. No, of course. Always happy to chat.
I really appreciate it. And everyone should see Jumanji. It's super fun. We watched it last night. They sent over a tablet.
Did they?
That's what they do now.
Really?
Sometimes. Yeah, studio will send over a tablet.
That's amazing.
So that you can't like steal it.
Yeah, because I know that you would have.
I would totally have stolen Jumanji.
Yeah.
And opened it somewhere else myself. But I didn't because it was on that goddamn tablet. But it's really fun. The movie's super fun.
Yeah, it's a really fun one.
And
sure.
It's good to see you guys all together and sort of like goofing off. And I don't know, anytime you want to come back. You don't really spend a lot of time in LA anymore.
I'm usually away working, but I spend some time here.
Yeah,
sometimes.
You still keep your house in L.A.?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so I have a base here and New York.
Fantastic.
So I can go back and forth.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, anytime, Karen Gillan, it is such a pleasure to see you.
I'm going
to
come back and play the piano, because I've been watching your progress on the piano.
Oh my gosh.
On Instagram.
I didn't know you played, and then you posted a video of you playing. I'm like, holy shit, she like really plays.
Well, I played from when I was 7 until I was 16.
Yeah.
Classical piano, and then I stopped and I forgot everything.
Really?
It's ridiculous.
Your hands, I feel like your hands remember some stuff, though.
I do remember some stuff, but I used to be way better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have time to play still?
Not so much. I would like to, though.
It is really one of those things that you just, it almost sort of, It almost sort of squashes some of the art to it, where you're like, oh, it's muscle memory.
Yeah.
I just have to learn repetition. How to do this over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I started playing in January and I...
Wow, you're good for somebody who
I'm okay.
started playing in January.
I mean, it you know, the video that posted was not take one.
How many takes did you do?
Oh my God.
Go
it
on.
Was really? It yeah. was probably over 2 days I must have tried to get that song like 50 times.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was always you know, there's sometimes in the beginning I would fuck it up right away and go, okay, fine. Then I'd get halfway through. But it was those ones where I would be in the last stretch and go, oh my God, I think I'm going to plank. Ah, shit. And then you got to go.
That's what I hate about the piano, is that pressure. Because it's so easy to make a mistake on the piano compared to other instruments.
Yeah.
Like, it's so intricate, the fingering of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I remember just getting so nervous in gratings and that feeling. I know what you're talking about.
Well, my piano teacher was saying that, you know, she was like, well, that's why, you know, concert pianists, it's like a bit...
Nerves of steel.
Because they, yeah, I mean... And you watch people that play these incredible, like, concerto pieces,
yeah.
and they don't... There's a really funny dude online called Lord Vinatero, and I think he's... I don't know where he's from. Maybe Portugal?
Right.
Or maybe he's Brazilian. But he plays these incredible... And I guess it's just a comfort level. I think you really just have to play from, like, early childhood.
Yeah, it's, like, ingrained in you at a certain point.
Because I don't think I can... I still... My mom at Thanksgiving, my mom was like, play for everyone. I'm like, I don't...
Oh, God.
No.
Not there yet.
Yeah.
No, well, you sound great.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you should have played.
We'll take a tour of the piano before you get out of here.
Yay.
The end... That was the ID10T podcast number 1036 with Karen Gillan, who I have so much respect for as a creator and as a friend. She's just a great person who I think is a great role model for any of you out there who are just thinking about trying something, getting involved in some creative pursuit that you have. I mean, listen, if Karen just wanted to... act in movies. That would be great. No one would say, like, you're not doing enough, but is so driven by creative energy that she is now a filmmaker as well. And I think it's an important lesson to learn because a lot of times I think, and I don't know, maybe it's just something that goes back to when we're in school and, you know, like you sort of wait for a teacher or an authority figure to tell you it's okay to do something. You know, or you wait for something to happen to you, but maybe you need to be the thing that happens and you need to take the initiative to just start figuring out how to manifest the thing that is inspiring to you. And listen, I know life is busy. We don't always have time for things. I would be willing to guess that in Karen's case, she's pretty busy doing movie after movie, acting in movie after movie after movie, and still finds the time to fit in, you know, writing and directing a short film, writing features. Like, Karen's definitely going to be one of those folks that over the next, you know, 10 or 20 years just has such an incredible body of work across so many different sectors of the entertainment business. And it really just starts with deciding to do stuff, taking those steps, and just figuring it out. I mean, I don't think, you know, when most people start a new venture, they start a new thing, they don't know everything that they're doing. They just take the step. And it always makes me so happy when people write into the corkboard and they say, like, oh, you talk a lot about just doing a thing, so I decided to do a thing. And I am always so delighted and pleased because making the decision is the first step and then just figuring it out and then just doing it. It really is, I mean, it's simple but complicated. Obviously, things require a lot of work. They require patience. They require time, you know. But the first step is a lot simpler than I think people realize, which is just doing it. You know, I mean, I remember when Karen started writing and directing a handful of years ago, she was just like, yeah, it's just something I want to do. I'm just going to do it. So I did it. I figured it out. And I really, really, really think when you look at all the different types of things that she's doing and this idea of sort of, you know, you could be your own multi-hyphenate. We talked about multi-hyphenate.
You know, you could be the multi-hyphenate, because I feel like the more things that you hyphenate in there, the more unique of a creative being that you are. So, you know, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to try stuff. I mean, look, we talked about piano a bit at the end of the podcast, and I talked myself out of doing it for the longest time because I was like, ah, it's going to be excruciating, and it's, I don't know, and I'm not going to be very good. And then finally I was like, well, that's, I don't know. I mean, I guess if I put enough work into it, eventually I'll be okay. And it's true. You just take the step and you put in the time and you just sort of enjoy the process that you're doing something, that you're learning something. I mean, it's rewarding and fulfilling for so many different reasons when you take up a new thing that you're excited and passionate about, because not only is the newness of it exciting, but also the learning part is very, very, very edifying to the spirit, to your creative spirit. And then on top of that, then you make a thing. Then there's like a little trophy, which is that you made a thing. And does it always have to be perfect? No. In fact, it's probably never perfect. I mean, perfect is a weird word. And you should get the idea of perfectionism just out of your head. Because there's no real perfect anything. You know, you do stuff and you learn and you move on and you do stuff and you learn and you move on. And I've said this 100 times, but there is no artistry in perfection. Artistry is in all the imperfections, the cracks, the, you know, like those are all the things that are human, that are special, you know? So don't worry about not hitting home runs the first time you pick up a bat, or not playing a concerto the first time you sit down at a piano, or not winning an Oscar the first time you write and direct a short film, or whatever it is. Just do it because you love it. And if all that other stuff can be a byproduct of that, but just do it because the process is gratifying to you and it's something you want to do. I mean, to hear Karen talk about film, to hear her talk about horror movies, like it, you can tell that she's so driven and so passionate about it. And also, it just, from, even if you take that all away just from a business standpoint, it's like, well, that's another whole field of options that are available to you. Like diversifying the portfolio of your skill set. Diversifying your skill set is good because, you know, it's, sometimes one thing might work out, another time something else might work out, and you never know. And if you have options, you can sort of create those options for yourself. So this is my weekly pep talk, and I hope it's not annoying. I guess if it is, you can just turn it off, but I just do it because it, you know, as someone who sets out to do things that they like to do, and I want that for you. I want you to, if that's what you want, I want that for you to be able to show yourself that you're capable of more than maybe you give yourself credit for, and that it's so easy to take that first step sometimes, and it's also even easier to talk ourselves out of that. So I'm just trying to get you to realize that maybe in certain circumstances, a percentage of the time, you're talking yourself out of doing stuff, and maybe there's not a real reason to not do it, and you could just do it without thinking about it, without overthinking it. So that's all. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful week or day or whenever you're listening to this, and I will see you in your ears real soon. All right, thanks. Bye.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges. that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200 million. $200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.